It's 1762, England. Mary Saunders is a 14-year-old girl living a harsh, drab, colorless existence in London. Her father has died in prison, and her mother is barely managing to hold her family together by mending clothes. Walking through the streets one day, Mary sees a bright red ribbon shining in the hair of a girl not much older than herself, a girl dressed in what to Mary's eyes looks like finery. Later, Mary sees a similar ribbon in the jacket of an old ribbon peddler. She asks him how much it costs. He quotes a price she can't possibly afford, unless she pays with something other than money. But she doesn't have to pay. He takes what he wants and leaves Mary with the ribbon. Thus begins a story of life in 18th century England for a common girl with uncommon aspirations, a story that ends in tragedy. The idea for the story came from the tiniest mention in an historical account of the age. Novelist Emma Donoghue came upon the scrap of the story just like Mary comes upon the scrap of ribbon. Donoghue's novel is called Slammerkin. Emma Donoghue joins us from Dublin. Welcome, Emma Donoghue.
Hello there.
First, let's get this right out at the beginning. The word slammerkin, what does that mean?
Isn't it impossible? I remember my editor in Britain suggested it as a title, and I said, no one knows what it means. And she said, that won't necessarily put them off. So a slammerkin was the name of a loose dress that you might put on in the morning to receive visitors, quite late in the morning. But it also meant a loose, slovenly, slatternly kind of woman. So to me, it was the perfect image for bringing together this story of clothes and women of no reputation, as they used to call them.
Now, you were noodling around doing research in historical accounts of 18th century England, and you came upon this shred of an account of a young girl who'd gone to the gallows.
Yes, all I found was a tiny mention of a murder, one of many murders in 18th century accounts. But this one said that the girl had given as her motive for this murder that she wanted fine clothes. And I thought, what kind of bimbo would kill someone with a cleaver, a meat cleaver, for the sake of dresses? But then I started thinking more about clothes, especially in the 18th century. And really, clothes were a woman's stock in trade. They were hugely important, both to self-image and actually to your financial status in the world.
Let's give a little background about Mary and how she comes to take on the profession, if you can call it that, of prostitution. She's 14 years old. She's kicked out of the house by her mother because Mary becomes pregnant since the ribbon peddler has raped her. And here she is, 14 years old, on the streets of London, which are pretty scary streets in the 18th century, right?
Absolutely. I suppose I wanted to create the most appalling situation for my main character in the first chapter, because one of the real thrills about historical fiction is that this society, for instance, was one without any safety nets. You know, there were no shelters or hostels to go to. There was no dole or welfare. If you fell, you fell with a bang. So in a way, in my first chapter, I am hurling my main character off the edge. And then I'm asking the question, can she save herself? Can she ever work her way back to a normal life? How much of your fate is just fate, and how much really is of your own making?
When Mary finds herself on the streets, she falls asleep that night, cold and alone, in a ditch, basically, covers herself up, and she is awakened the next morning by a bunch of guys. I mean, basically, a bunch of soldiers are raping her, and that's how she wakes up.
You're going to be turning all your listeners off this book. It does have a few happier moments later on, but I agree. It's brutality after brutality at the beginning, because I wanted to use another closed metaphor, I wanted to strip this character bare. I wanted to take away all possible supports from her and then see what she could make of herself. Could she reinvent herself, for instance?
Well, how possible was that in 18th century England, to reinvent yourself after experiences like this?
Well, you know, the reason I chose the 18th century is that it was the era of the beginning of upward mobility. I mean, nowadays we assume that our world is a basic meritocracy, you know, that you can go to college and work your way up in the world and merit will rise. And those really are 18th century ideas. So I wanted to look at the very beginning of that kind of thinking about the individual. 100 years before that, I think Mary would have been utterly jammed into her little social niche. But in the 18th century, there were lots of cases of, for instance, street prostitutes becoming highbrow courtesans and then marrying lords and settling down rich and happy. So there were precedents for her. And I wanted to create a very accurate picture of the 18th century, you know, not just frills and jolly wenches. So I really researched as many obscure aspects of 18th century history as I could. And in particular, I put in a character who is both a woman and a slave, because I wanted to emphasize that a lot of British 18th century wealth was based on slavery, and that slavery was not just some American concept. So in a way, by having my characters cover the full range from the lords and ladies up in the big house, right down to a slave who has no status and no money, I wanted to create a kind of a map of the power structures of a society like that. And Mary's not at the very bottom. I mean, you know, at least she's a white girl, at least she's not a slave. So I suppose I wanted to really explore issues of power and of human rights.
Emma Donoghue, let me ask you a little more about clothes, the importance that clothes play in this novel, because they're not just vain glory, it's not just frippery, it's not just trivialities. These clothes really symbolize an entire world for Mary Saunders.
Absolutely. And there's a scene where she first goes into the dressmaking room of the woman she's working for, and the clothes are all hanging up on high hangers and they're dangling down. And I wanted to write it as if this was almost like a beautiful, strange forest. It was a world she was walking into. So clothes are a very ambiguous element in this novel, and what her prostitute friend Doll tells her is two things about clothes: that clothes make the woman, but also that clothes are the greatest lie ever told, that they are deeply deceptive, and you might see a woman on the street in great clothes who in fact is starving and sick.
Emma Donoghue, would you read that passage where Mary goes into a dressmaker's shop and she sees all these fabrics and all this color, and it's like another world to her?
Here we go. The shop was a small space, peopled entirely by clothes. A lady's embroidered bodice, laced up with silver, hung from hooks set in the ceiling. Ruched under petticoats swayed in the icy draft from the door. Mary had the impression they had just stopped dancing. A quilted petticoat in swanskin flannel was tasseled in 10 places. A French sack gown dropped voluminous pleats of yellow and white silk. "Stripes?" asked Mary. "On a sack gown?" Mrs. Jones put her hand under the hem to catch the light. "Oh, yes, my draper in Bristol assured me it's the very latest thing. This one's promised to Mrs. Fortune for the Shrove Ball. She says if I sell stripes to any other lady in Monmouth, she'll see me ruined." Mary joined in the laughter, a little absently. She walked up to a riding habit in fine green wool and brushed it with one finger. Her mouth watered as at the smell of a cut lemon. She turned to the dressmaker. "You made all these, Mrs. Jones?" "Madam," she added belatedly. "Aye, but not the hats," said Mrs. Jones modestly. Mrs. Jones had strong views on what was à la mode, what was démodé, and what was likely to be the coming thing. The first rule of cut, she said, was be true to the cloth. But the first rule of business was give the customers what they want.
Well, some things have never changed, I guess. You got to give the customers what they want.
It's true. It's true.
Emma Donoghue, even though you knew from the beginning that you were going to kill off Mary Saunders, your main character, that because of this historical account that you started with of a young girl who goes mm-hmm. to the gallows, even though you knew that, was it sad to have to write the book this way?
Well, the psychology of writing is very strange, because yes, it is sad, and probably when I was first sketching out the scene I felt a little sad about it, but there's also a huge satisfaction in writing a sort of culminating scene, especially when you know from the start that that is where your story is heading. So I've often got a real pleasure in terms of writing from writing scenes that I would hope my readers would be distressed by. And now, I don't know, is this hard-heartedness common among writers, because I know some writers get very upset, but I think I'm very much above it all, looking down, and I'm seeing real delight in putting the last jigsaw piece into place. Yes, it does sound indecent to admit it, but it's enormous fun.
Emma Donoghue, her latest novel is called Slammerkin. She joined us from Dublin. Thank you, Emma Donoghue.
Thank you.